The divided American attitudes towards sex are well portrayed by this year's Grammy Awards. Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion performed one of the country's most popular songs, WAP. That's an acronym for three words starting with WET. It celebrates sexuality. That celebration of sexuality drew more than 1,000 complaints to the FCC about the Grammy broadcast. So sex is wonderful, sex is dirty, take your pick. But sexuality is part of being human, and a little education goes a long way. Planned Parenthood has been offering sexuality education to children for many years, and like all education, it too had to change with the pandemic. Two guests join us from Planned Parenthood of Southwestern Oregon. Rudy Bebekian is a community educator. Welcome, Ruby.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Have I pronounced your last name correctly?
Yes, Bebekian, it was perfect.
Okay, excellent. Amy Handler is with us as well, Chief of Education and Community Partnerships. Amy, welcome to you.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Now, as we describe Southwestern Oregon, I should point out, as Planned Parenthood defines it, Southwestern Oregon is a pretty broad region, isn't it, Amy?
Yeah, we serve basically 8 counties in the lower left-hand quadrant of Oregon. So we go all the way from, you know, the Cascades to the ocean, and then up to like Benton County.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so everything pretty much south of Benton County is your corner of Oregon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we do have some patients and clients from Northern California as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Amy, if you would, give us a little history. Planned Parenthood has been teaching young people for a long time.
Yeah, so, and Planned Parenthood of Southwestern Oregon, we're actually in our 55th year. We're celebrating our 55th anniversary this year. And we've had an education program for about the entire time we've been in operation. So we serve about 8,000 youth and adults each year with sexuality education and programming.
Has the general approach changed much over the 55 years? And I do mean pre-pandemic at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think America's approach to sex ed has changed, you know, from the 80s until now. I think we get a lot of parents that, you know, sign their kids up and say, I don't want my kids to get what I got, you know, like scare them straight or... and so we have a really holistic approach to sexuality education.
In general, Ruby Bebekian, and this is a bit of a minefield, I think, not just the teaching about sexuality itself, which will always probably have some discomfort and controversy attached to it, but also the lightning rod that Planned Parenthood can be.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it can be a challenge sometimes with just our name. Some people make a lot of assumptions about what we might bring into the classroom just based off of what they might see in the media or hear in the news. And I do think, though, oftentimes people are pleasantly surprised that, you know, we're coming from a neutral place and just trying to give young people the information they need to make healthy choices about their bodies.
So now let's bring the pandemic part of this in, Ruby, and talk about how you approached regrouping and figuring out how to move ahead.
Yeah, so it was a pretty quick transition for us in the pandemic. I think for all educators everywhere, just suddenly being caught with, what do we do? How do we educate people if we're not in front of them? And so our approach was just to transition all of our curricula and all of our programs to be virtual. So we... in the springtime, a lot of that was just recording videos of ourselves teaching and sending those to our partners to get in front of young people, and has really changed a lot now to be primarily live presentations online. And then we also have some curricula that we wrote for school so that teachers can teach sex ed however it is that they're teaching their kids right now.
All right. So the reference has often been made to trying to fly the plane while you're building it. It sounds like that was very
exactly.
much the case with you, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely was. I would say, though, we've learned a lot and have come out of it better educators because of it.
So if you would, one of you, give the rundown of the services offered now and for what age groups?
Sure. So our education services, we have programs for youth. Those are after-school virtual programs. We have one for 5th and 6th graders and one for 7th and 8th graders. We run a youth leadership program for high school students called the Revolution Youth Leadership Program. And then we also partner with schools and universities and community organizations to provide direct teaching and training to whomever it is that they serve. So we might go to a Boys and Girls Club and teach a lesson or go to teach professional development trainings for youth-serving professionals.
So the Revolution Youth Leadership, that's interesting. Is that a case where you want to have more younger people teach people who are, you know, still sort of fellow kids?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's a year-long program for high school students. They get a ton of education around sexuality, and then we also teach them how to be peer educators. And then they go out and teach other high school students, and they actually teach our consent lesson in our after-school program for middle school students.
And speaking of consent, what kinds of parental permissions are required to get kids into these programs?
Yeah, so it kind of depends on which one. So for schools, a lot of the parental consent and parental opt-outs are handled by the schools. For our virtual after-school programs, generally parents will sign their kids up, and there's a registration process online, and we get their contact information and that sort of thing and find out why they're interested. Amy, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, sex ed really does start in the home. And so we engage parents in many different ways. We do a parent preview for our fifth grade lessons, bring parents in, let them see the content. We usually send out materials for all of our middle school programs before the program even begins so that parents have ideas that understand what the content is, what their kids are going to be learning about, and also help prepare them for what kinds of questions they might get. Many of our programs, we encourage youth to talk with trusted adults in their life.
Mm-hmm. Are there areas, Amy, in which Southwestern Oregon lags? There are some messages that are specifically targeted to this region because there are some things that need to be gotten.
Can you clarify your question a bit?
I guess what I'm asking, are there areas where you see deficiencies in knowledge about sexuality or about STIs or any of the things that come as ancillary concerns with sexuality? Are there things that Southwestern Oregon needs to know that you have to work a little harder?
Yeah, definitely. So thanks for that. So we actually have some of the highest STI rates in the country, Southwestern Oregon. And so we are definitely working very, very hard to get that message out there and to work with, we work with health departments in all of our communities, not only to spread that message, but to increase access to testing and treatment. We are definitely on the forefront of trying to combat the STI epidemic within the pandemic. And we know that this past year has been particularly hard. A lot of health departments have had to fully switch over to focusing on COVID-19, obviously, and we've really stepped up. We've done, I want to say, almost 50,000 chlamydia tests in the last year, which is up from previous years. So we're really trying to get ahead of the STI epidemic and spread that message any way we can to get yourself tested. We're actually in the middle of Get Yourself Tested Month, so it's a perfect question.
Oh, well, that's right. And STI Awareness Week is this week as well, mm-hmm. April 11th through 17th. Mm-hmm. That's right. I'd forgotten
exactly,
about that.
Exactly, yeah.
We're talking to Amy Handler and Ruby Bebekian from Planned Parenthood of Southwestern Oregon, PPSO, talking about sexuality education programs for kids starting at grade 5, which have obviously had to change with a lot of education because of the pandemic. You're welcome to come into the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. And at the risk of insulting you, the listener, we didn't explain STIs first. And we kind of switched from STDs, sexually transmitted diseases, to sexually transmitted infections in recent years. And so there we are, STIs. I wanted to ask Ruby about whether some advantages have actually popped up in not being able to do the standard classroom setting for some of the educational programs.
Yeah, we definitely have seen some surprising advantages that we're excited about. The first is our reach. We're able to access more people. We're able to see youth who live in different counties and different communities that we're not able to drive to. We've served youth across state lines from California to Philadelphia, which has been really, really cool to bring young people together that have different experiences in school that may not be getting this information in more traditional ways. We've also been able to create an environment in the classroom that feels a little bit different. I think because youth are not necessarily learning alongside peers that they're going to see at school every day, there's an increase in comfort levels. They're able to ask questions that they won't feel as embarrassed about or able to there's just a little bit more confidentiality and privacy built into a space when you're not around people that you know very well. And so that's been really delightful, and it's led to a lot of really great conversations.
Oh, that's really interesting. So instead of being in a room with your peers, having to raise your hand and ask the question that, you know, you really need to know something about, but you're afraid to ask it in front of them, if you're sitting there in front of your computer screen with your camera turned off, different kind of situation completely.
Exactly. Yeah, there's more anonymity to it.
Mm-hmm. And so now that the kids are going back to school, are you keeping some programs online? Are you including that as part of the overall approach?
Yeah, we are. Go ahead.
No.
Go ahead, Amy.
Thanks. We are, we're going to maintain our after-school programming, our virtual programming that we offer every month for 5th through 8th grade. And we also have a full virtual sex ed boot camp for youth serving professionals. So we did that last summer. It was very successful. And like Ruby said, normally we see majority folks from Oregon and Southwestern Oregon. Last year in our sex ed boot camp, we had participants from Alaska all the way to Florida. Our focus will always be Southwestern Oregon, and the majority of folks that were in the room were from Southwestern Oregon, but it's been a really interesting space, and so we're going to maintain that this summer as well.
I need to explain, when you say youth serving professionals, youth serving is a modifier. They are professional. We're talking people who serve youth. They're people teaching kids. I mean, we're talking teachers essentially, right?
Yeah, teachers. Yeah, go ahead, Ruby.
Yeah, so teachers, healthcare professionals, a lot of folks that work in the nonprofit industry that work with incarcerated youth or youth in residential treatment centers. So anyone that has young people in their lives that they care about and they want to provide information to.
Mm-hmm. Boot camp, though, that's so it's usually, 5 days over the course of the summer, but now has to obviously change as well because of the pandemic.
Yeah, we used to actually do a 2-day program in person, and mm-hmm. we transitioned it to 5 days last year so that folks weren't sitting in front of a screen like all day.
Yeah.
So we did 2 to 3 hour segments we brought in some pretty incredible local professionals to teach mindful movement, and we had a yoga class just to try to bring some of that self-care forward.
Let's bring a phone call in here. We have Mark and Merlin on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Planned Parenthood's sexuality education programs with Amy Handler and Rudy Bebekian. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. In the summer of 2015, I was treated to a dedication of the youth facility at the Kuruk facility down near Wairika by my housemate, who's an architect, who had designed it. So one of the things that happened was they had this celebration of this dance ceremony, and I recognized from my studies at SOU that this was something that was universal in Southwest Oregon and Northern California. The indigenous tribes celebrated the onset of the first menstrual cycle for young girls. And I'm wondering if you would be interested in reaching out to try to incorporate something like that into your program.
All right. Thanks for the question, Mark. Appreciate that. Ruby, is that something that has been discussed at all?
First of all, Mark, I love that. I love that you brought that into this space. I think that that's really cool. And I think it also just illuminates how different people have different relationships with sexuality and sexual health milestones. I think it, I love that. I love that different cultures celebrated in different ways. I'm Armenian, and in my culture, there is a celebration around first menstruation. And so I think that that hits me a little bit close to home. What I would say is, in the classroom, right, we always want to come from a values-neutral perspective, and we might tell folks that different cultures celebrate this in different ways, but we wouldn't want to, introduce tradition or anything like that into the classroom.
All right, so it's more that you can talk about the fact that this does happen, but not make it part of the curriculum. Not the celebration doesn't become necessarily part of the curriculum.
Correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask, too, Amy, about public health parallels between what's being taught in the sexuality education and things done to prevent the spread of COVID-19. I would think there's some echoes there in each and the other.
Yeah, there are definitely some serious parallels, be it with consent, talking about, how close you're going to get to somebody, talking about wearing a mask. I think that there's a lot of parallels to, negotiating condoms and birth control. Yeah, there are a lot of parallels. We actually talked about offering, and obviously we're trying to get our curriculum off the ground, but we talked about doing like a special segment last year or like session all around the parallels between COVID-19 and sexual health. Maybe we'll do it at Sex Ed Bootcamp this year.
Does it help in the other direction, Ruby? Does it help to talk about condoms if you can say, well, you know, people get weird about condoms like they get weird about masks?
Yeah, I think that young people are really smart and can see those parallels, and it's always nice to bring the conversation into the current moment. And so I think that there are a lot of advantages to comparing those two things. And and I think learning how to communicate and acknowledge our own boundaries and then communicate those to other people is a really good conversation that can come out of that.
We mentioned this is STI Awareness Week. It is also, I noticed, Sexual Assault Awareness Month. I have to assume that's also a pretty good-sized chunk of the, or at least a significant mention within the curriculum, Ruby.
Yeah, so we do a lot of education around healthy relationships and consent and where to go for support, how to support a friend. It's the law in Oregon that young people receive that information from kindergarten through 12th grade, something around consent and boundaries and sexual assault support. And so we do a lot of that education. Our Revolution Youth Leadership Program, those youth care a lot about that. And so that is a big focus of the education they provide to young people as well.
Is there pretty much an exact overlap with the things that get taught from Planned Parenthood of Southwestern Oregon and the guidelines set up by the Oregon Department of Education?
Yes, absolutely. So all of our curricula aligns directly with the Oregon State Health Education Standards and Performance Indicators. So, yes, a direct line.
And then, Ruby, did you put up some new social media sites to kind of help people stay in touch with the programs as schools were out?
Yes, we did. So that was one of the big changes that happened during the pandemic was introducing a education-specific Instagram page and education-specific Facebook page, and we post a lot of information on those sites. We do some fun campaigns around. We use it as a space to educate people.
All right, so that's one place people can go. We do provide links to that from our discussion of this session on our website at jeffexchange.org. A couple seconds left here, Ruby or Amy. Talk about how people can otherwise contact this information and young people can make use of it.
Yeah, you can get all of this on our website, which is ppsworegon.org. All of our education resources are linked there. And you can also follow us on social media at PPSW Oregon or at PPSWO Education.
Okay, it's all out there then. So PPSWOregon.org, a good place to start. Links also on our website at jeffexchange.org. Thanks to Amy Handler and Ruby Bebekian.